My name is Michael Brinkman. I'm a managing director with Jefferies. I have the honor of introducing Dr. Patrick Soon-Shiong. I've known Patrick since 1996, which means I'm over the age of 20, although it's difficult to tell. I've worked with Patrick since, and actually he's South African, as am I. So Patrick is the most successful entrepreneur in the entire healthcare industry, also very importantly a co-owner of the LA Lakers and some other interesting sports teams on the way. I want him to buy Manchester United so I can have free tickets for the games. Dr. Soon-Shiong has been very influential in the biopharmaceutical industry, founded a very successful company called American Pharmaceutical Partners that was sold for multi-billion dollars to Fresenius, and then spun out Abraxis, which had a product called Abraxane, which today is one of the most important drugs in the treatment of cancer patients, and is owned by Celgene. Today, Patrick is CEO and chairman of the Nant family of companies based in Los Angeles, and doing some of the most incredible work in oncology that anybody could dream of. Patrick is really, I think, if anybody in this room had unlimited capital and a dream to try and help patients, you would probably be doing what Patrick is doing. Some of those include putting together multiple developmental drugs, vaccines, antibodies, chemotherapy, all together, in all of which are experimental in treating patients, building oncology centers, buying hospitals to treat these patients, and putting it all together in a way that only Patrick can do. So we've asked Patrick to speak today about his vision beyond checkpoint inhibitors and CAR-T, and to talk about some of the work that the Nant family of companies is doing today. So with that, Patrick, it's my pleasure to introduce you.
Thank you, Michael. You know, it's very rarely, I was just saying, that I've been given an hour. I'm not sure you could stand an hour. So what we'll do is I'll give a presentation and really a view and actually present things that we've been doing quite literally in stealth mode for almost a decade now, and then share that today this is the first meeting in which, in a very public setting, I've come back onto the investor stage to present our work, and consistent with just this last ASCO, which most of you may have just attended. So I think what I'm going to do is take you through a little bit of a journey, and then I'm sure there'll be time left for Q&A, because I'm not going to hold a one-on-one after this, and whoever wants to ask a question, feel free at the end. But as Michael said, you know, I started my career at UCLA as a transplant surgeon in a very unusual setting, in that I also worked with Don Morton and did Whipple's in pancreatic cancer. And in my world of transplantation, what I was trying to do was trying to overcome tolerance so we can don't have rejection. And it turned out I began to learn that cancer in itself was a master mechanism of overcoming tolerance, in the sense that the only reason you and I or anybody would ever have cancer is that the cancer has tricked the immune system to believe that it's normal self and don't eat it. In my world of transplantation, I began to see, as I was building stem cells, that the mutation rate of normal stem cells is so prevalent that in essence every one of you sitting in this room, as you're building stem cells, which is a normal phenomenon of life, in order for you to have any heart muscle, red blood cells, white cells, you are producing stem cells sitting in this room. But the mutational mistake that has to happen mathematically is inevitable. So you actually, in a sense, are creating transformed cells sitting in your seats today. And the only reason you don't have cancer is that your immune system is recognizing these transformed cells as bad cells and killing it. That's what we call the innate immune system, and that's the natural killer cell. So you and I have this cell floating around our body called the natural killer cell, that over time, as you age, the natural killer cell depletes in activity, and as the cancer or the cell gets smarter, it creates what we call a suppressor system and blocks the natural killer cells, and the cancer grows. That natural killer cell, my first paper published as an academic was in 1990. I was able to show that it was the natural killer cell that was killing the pancreatic cancer cell, which then said the only way to do this, you need to get into the tumor microenvironment. So I built Abraxane. And what was Abraxane? Well, Abraxane was to take a nanoparticle of a human protein called albumin, it's in your body, and deliver it inside the tumor microenvironment, and then really immunomodulate and kill the suppressors. There's a process called GP60 caveolin-1 caveolotranscytosis. These are big scientific words that if you ask every oncologist today who uses Abraxane, and ask them, I would challenge some of you to ask your favorite oncologist or your favorite investors, what is transcytosis and Abraxane? They would have very little idea. I've tried for 15 years to try and educate the world about transcytosis, and frankly, at this last ASCO, just a couple of days ago, I put up the same video that we built in 2003. And why do I say that? Because without getting into the tumor microenvironment, there's no chance of you orchestrating the multiple cells that are suppressing the natural killer cell. What I've discovered, sadly, is this industry, not sadly, I suppose, is very conservative in terms of change. And when you start looking at the premise by which we built cancer drugs, you begin to worry and wonder how that came about or what we've been doing for 40 years. So I will start my first session explaining a hypothesis that's been really bothering me for 25 years, which then said after building APP and Abraxis, I would sell it to Fresenius and sell it to Celgene and take the funding and build a 25-acre campus in Los Angeles, a science park, that would be binary. We would ask this question, and if we were right, it would have major impact, and if we were wrong, it was a wonderful scientific exercise. And the question was as follows. We built chemotherapy from nitrogen mustard when, during the World War, when it was found that you could give this gas and kill people. And then maybe then you would actually use this, and you saw this book by DeVita on the war on cancer, how the history of how the chemotherapy was developed. And today we use high-dose chemotherapy. Now I ask you this logic. If we believe scientifically that the only reason you don't have cancer is that your immune system is protecting you, and we also know that high-dose chemotherapy actually kills the entire T cells and immune system. In fact, a whole company has been produced called Neupogen and Epogen to overcome your chemotherapy. And then we add the complete dislogic of saying we're going to give you high-dose chemotherapy, wipe out your T cells, and then give you a checkpoint inhibitor to take the brakes of the T cells we just wiped out. You begin to see the illogic of this logic, I suppose, best way. I'm not sure that's English, but... but I think this is, if you start really, really digging deep down into why we've lost the war in cancer, you begin to see how one process begets another process, and we get a self-fulfilling prophecy of because it's done at the NCI, and then it's followed by these major cancer centers, and then most importantly, it gets reimbursed. And then it becomes the theory. And we've now entered this new era of immune oncology, and I completely believe in this immune oncology. And CAR-Ts is the wave of the day, and there's 700 maybe trials now with checkpoint inhibitors one checkpoint here on top of another, costing patients $1 million each, $20 billion market size for checkpoint inhibitors. And again, there's some fallacies going on right down there because of a thing called a CD8 killer T cell. Yet the CD8 killer T cell is not what's going to give you memory. It's a CD4 and a CD8, and what they call a memory NK and memory NK and T cell. These were very complex thoughts that was impossible for me to try and address as a single company. I knew when I took APP and Abraxis out as two companies and tried to put them together, there was great furor on Wall Street. I then broke them apart. The act of breaking them apart increases the market cap of $1 billion just by breaking them apart. Because the way people invest, you can either invest in a generic company, invest in a biotech company, you can invest in both. So today what I'm going to do is take you through, and the reason I need to put a safe harbor statement is because we have two publicly traded companies and one private company. And the private company is called Nant, and the public company is called NantQuest, and the other public company is called Nant Health. So I'm going to try and take you through a journey, and the luxury of having an hour is I'm going to give you five or six chapters and talk about first how we lost the war on cancer. But I want to bring now this concept of the neoepitope to your attention. And this is what we've pursued in addition to the natural killer cell. What I think may be the path to the cure, and frankly a path to a true cancer vaccine. I need to obviously explain to you in English a very complex concept of MHC-restricted T-cell-mediated neoepitope. And that words I'll try and put together and to explain what that means with regard to a product and a company. But I'll also explain to you the challenges of this neoepitope, the enormous bioinformatic challenge, the mathematical bioinformatic challenge of finding that one sequence or number of peptides that is the basis of causing the cancer, and how there's one in a billion T cells roving around and the rest of the T cells aren't recognizing this new epitope. And how do we find this? And how do we find this for N equals one, but it is for 7 billion people, and how do we cross the chasm of what we call this massive scale? And not only that, how do we address this complex biology of delivering this new epitope and creating this vaccine? And how we, in fact, we've addressed this challenge, which I now call the NAND cancer vaccine. And the first thing I needed to address was address the regulatory challenges, because FDA has never taken one novel biologic, combined it with another novel biologic, and make that a single protocol as a trial. Now, two novel biologics, what I call duo, may be interesting, but what if I wanted three or trio? What if I wanted four? What if I wanted five, penta? Frankly, what if I wanted 10 novel biologics in the same protocol? Because that's the only way I can prove this vaccine. I'm here to announce today we've been given approval. We have now 25 INDs to combine 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 10 novel biologics in a single protocol. And that's an NAND cancer vaccine, which is hard for you to conceive, that in fact that could be a single protocol. So that's why I did need an hour to describe what this is. And the first part of the NAND vaccine is a albumin-driven first Abraxane, and now the next one called aldoxirubicin, tied to a adenovirus and yeast virus vector system that would drive the antigen, specifically the new epitope, tied to exogenous infusion of natural killer cells, tied to activation of T cells and cytokines. That is now a massive protocol, which will then, I'll share with you for the first time today, our clinical results. And I've taken on the biggest of biggest challenge, metastatic pancreatic cancer. But I've not taken on first-line metastatic pancreatic cancer. I've taken on third-line metastatic pancreatic cancer. There's a review now just put up at the European, with Europeans, at best supportive care, third-line metastatic pancreatic cancer. The survival, median survival, 1.1 months. So you could change a person's life with third-line metastatic pancreatic cancer. And if this is correct, if our binary thought is correct, we could modify third-line metastatic pancreatic cancer. And I'll share with you the results of the first 7 or 10 patients today. When I took this concept of taking third-line metastatic pancreatic cancer, my colleague, Dr. Jeffrey Schlom, at the National Cancer Institute, who went with me to the FDA, quite literally thought I was crazy, because he says this is the reason these are very sick patients. Why would you risk this protocol on very sick patients? Because if patients died, not because of the vaccine, but because of the disease, you would endanger the entire program. He was right, of course, but it was important for me to take that risk because this was a binary moment. If this worked, this then would change the course of where we would spend our time and resources. And that's why I'm out here today to present to you the NAND companies. So this will be the arc of the presentation. I would like you to bear with me, and we'll have questions at the end. And usually I love people to just interrupt and ask as we go through, and if you want to interrupt, feel free to. But let's go into each one of these, and let's start with the war on cancer. So as I said, we started with the chemotherapy. We started with high-dose radiation, all of which is wiping out the immune system. And said, well, we have a better way, and we'll go to the monoclonal antibodies. So you're all familiar then with Rituxan, Herceptin, Cetuximab, and now Avelumab, what we call IgG1 monoclonal antibodies. What we forgot, however, is that the way these monoclonal antibodies work is it binds to natural killer cells. They bind by, and they act by a mechanism called ADCC. But only 5% of human beings have a receptor on the natural killer cell called CD16, which binds to Herceptin, Rituxan. So if, in fact, you could engineer a natural killer cell with a high affinity CD16, you would change the outcome of 95% of people who do not have that. So while monoclonal antibodies has been a great boon and still will be, the deficiencies is that we are born, only 5% are born with us with this high affinity NK cell that will activate. And then came the magic bullet with Gleevec on targeted therapy. And everybody thought we now had the cure. Gleevec was the greatest drug because it's a fusion protein against a fusion protein. And again, sadly, there's a flaw. And I'll share the flaw with you with regard to targeted therapy. We've been trained as clinicians to look at drugs, I have a breast cancer drug, a lung cancer doctor, breast cancer surgeon, colon cancer, because we always thought and assumed that cancer was a single clone. And therefore, you'd give this maximum tolerated dose, and that's why chemotherapy was designed that way. And if these were the assumptions were correct, we would have cured cancer by now. We give the drug, hope not to kill the patient, we'll kill the cancer. And why have we not won? Because in fact, cancer is not a single clone, it's multiple clones, millions of clones, thousands of clones. And so we have what we call this illusion of clonal dominance. And really what we've done, in essence, we've actually just released the resistant clones. So it's a sad thought to think that when the cancer is in the primary state and we give high-dose chemotherapy, we may inadvertently release metastasis. We may inadvertently be the cause of metastasis because we've released these resistant clones. So here's this drug and that has been developed for good target therapy, and this is a patient, as you could see, this is a very famous picture in New England Journal of Medicine, metastatic melanoma, and a BRAF inhibitor and the miraculous cure. So if it was a single clone, this patient is cured, except that in 9 weeks, this happens. 9 years to develop the drug, 9 weeks to relapse. Which then says the whole concept of targeted therapy, and only now is this concept of going down the wrong assumption and taking an entire industry down targeted therapy. I'm sure you walked around ASCO and saw all the targeted drugs. That the clonal dominance is an illusion and it's merely an inevitable acquisition of resistance to targeted therapies. We tried to prove this and did a study in Washington with triple negative breast cancer patients. A very brave study done by University of Washington in which the patients we biopsied on day 4, day 7, day 125, day 194, and day 250. And during the biopsy, we would then take the biopsy and do the genomic sequencing and look at the mutations. And on day 4, from the same breast, multiple tissues, multiple mutations. The patient then receives cisplatin, and by day 7, it changed. The treatment itself changes the clones. By day 125, by 194, until she passed away at day 250, and you look at this clonal changes, and that cancer is truly a multi-clonal disease. So I think the issue then of this resistance is a fait accompli, and it's merely the interval required for your subclone to repopulate the lesion, says that, and this came out of a multinational pharma, and you will know who I'm speaking about, a website, where they were going after these pathways, and these are the pathways inside the cancer cell. And the war of cancer, as I said, is this complex biology. And if you go after this cancer one cell, and you said you're going to target that with this single targeted therapy, what happens to this other cell that you happen to have not targeted, or this other cell? Which then brought us to, and this is what I literally said 10 years ago, that we have no chance to fight the war this way. The way we have to fight the war is actually deal with the entire host. This cancer is inside a milieu of what we call the tumor microenvironment. It's shielded by this blood vessel wall called the endothelial cell. So we need to penetrate the blood vessel wall, and that was the purpose of Abraxane and the GP60 and L-doxorubicin. We need to decode the tumor so we can find a new epitope to upregulate the immune system. And we need to kill this cancer from the outside in, not from the inside out. Which then takes us to this magic about checkpoint therapy. And then sadly, checkpoint therapy, the CD19 for liquid tumors, is a process and not a product. I met with Jim Jimenez, who was then at one stage former CEO of Novartis, and he asked me that question. And I said, it's a process, not a product. You need to figure out a way in which we can create a product. And the problem with the modulating a CD8 T cell, it's one product. And I worry a little bit about putting CD19 and going after B cell and lymphomas, because you completely forever wipe out the B cells of patients, which means for life the patients require IVIG. I don't know if you all realize that. The patients requiring CAR T cell therapy for life require IVIG. So again, this is the concern I had, that it's not just the T cell, but if we took on, however, interrogating the cancer with a test that is ridiculously complex of doing the whole genome sequencing, the whole RNA sequencing called transcriptomics, the whole HLA sequencing, and find what we call the new epitope, we can decode the innards of the cancer of n equals 1. But that's not enough. We then need to figure out how to bring in the natural killer cell, how to bring in the B cell, how to bring in the killer T cell, how to suppress the suppressor T cells, and how to activate the dendritic cell. And that is the vaccine. That complexity goes beyond any oncologist, because in fact it's really very highly sophisticated immunology. So it means today oncologists need to be immunologists. And how do we change the behavior of doctors today not to give high-dose chemotherapy but to give metronomic low-dose chemotherapy and to use nanoparticles? And this is this natural killer cell that acts by targeting the receptor called NKG2D, putting in these granzymes, and quite literally exploding the cell from inside out. So the heterogeneity is irrelevant. The ability now to bring together and explode and expose all the antigens to T cells coming into the environment, peeking his head right at the corner there and the corner of that, and exploding it, is the future. So that's where we were going, and that's now taking us 10 years to expose this premise and this promise of this new epitope. But what is a new epitope? So this is, I apologize for the cartoon, but it's the only way I could describe this to you. So this is inside a cancer cell, and we have this mutated proteins. But this mutated protein is a protein of you. It is of your genome. So it's n equals 1. It's no other body's, there's no other protein that it mutates. It's just your genome. It then goes through machinery inside the cell called the proteasome and gets chopped up into peptides. And then it goes into the endoplasmic reticulum. It's a processing system so that it binds to this. So think of the new epitope as a drumstick to this waiter called the MHC class 1 and class 2 systems. There's thousands of class 1s and class 2s and one new epitope. This is the challenge, because this thousands of class 1 and class 2s, what we call MHC restriction, takes this new epitope and then presents it on the cancer cell. That is the holy grail, to find that new epitope. It's like the matrix, you the one, and that's the one we need to go find. And then there's one in a billion T cells that actually recognizes that not only the MHC, but also the new epitope. So it's called hot dog in the bun, that new epitope, because on the one hand you have this one in a billion new peptide of 8 to 9 amino acids, you have this MHC, and you have the T cell receptor. If you can solve this problem and activate this T cell receptor, there's a possibility of you creating memory cells and curing cancer. That was the wonderful challenge that we've been exploring, and this 25-year pursuit to take cancer, do this whole genome sequencing, but we have to do it against your genome. So this idea of tumor against normal is the only way to find the new epitope. Yet the products out there in the market by Foundation and by other gene assays measure only the tumor. They don't measure the patient's normal, and they use a reference genome and make calls and mutations, which we just published to show it's 90% false positive, because the calls that they call mutations are actually normal variations of you, which means you really have to do tumor normal. And you will hear later on today about GPS cancer and NANT Health. So that was the pursuit of NANT Health, to actually truly find the sequences that matter. But really, at the end of the day, what we really wanted to do is put this through this artificial intelligence, machine learning, supercomputing pipeline so that we can actually identify these new epitopes, which took us 10 years to develop the most sophisticated predictive modeling, supercomputing, machine learning, artificial intelligence pipeline, and today that's the buzzword AI. And I'm very excited about the fact that Google and Apple may cure cancer, but I doubt it. With AI out there, because the sophistication needed and the database that you need to understand the genomic sequencing. And more importantly, you need to deliver this new epitope, because by itself it's not immunogenic, which then says we need to find a vector. And you and I all have this thing called the adenovirus. And I was at the keynote address in 1995 at the NIH when I was presenting, and Wilson was presenting the adenovirus for gene therapy. And the problem with adenovirus is you can only give it once because you all have immunity. But we figured out a way to actually create a novelly engineered adenovirus called E2B deleted that can be injected multiple times even in the face of adenoviral immunity. And it's a perfect vehicle to give subcutaneously to activate the dendritic cell and educate the dendritic cell. So this is the path which we believe to the new epitope vaccine, or the NAN cancer vaccine. And I'm pleased to announce that the FDA just gave us authorization to initiate the world's first new epitope in patients who were cured of cancer through their surgery in the adjuvant setting. So you will hear more from NantHealth on this next generation GPS-guided cancer vaccine. But this cartoon, which I showed literally 10, 15 years ago, is now a reality. That we will be able to print your drug. That the DNA sequence is the basis of the new epitope. So now that I've taken you through the promise, let me take you through the challenge, because there are challenges. The challenges is that when you take, this is one patient, with... I don't know what my timing is like. Where's the clock? Oh, there it is, 11 minutes. Okay, well, that's good. I didn't need an hour. This is one patient with triple negative breast cancer. When you just do the new mutations, there's 18,000 mutations on the DNA on the left-hand side. Those mutations don't matter because it's the mutations that's expressed, meaning that's on the surface. So that means you need to do RNA, and you reduce that down to 8,000 mutations. Well, that doesn't matter, because it's not the mutation that's expressed, the mutation that actually recognizes by the MHC, that little waiter, and the T-cell receptor. And that's where the challenge is, and you're down to 20. And can you predict out of the 18,000 DNAs down to the 20, and then can you then take that sequence and put it into the adenovirus? Well, I'm pleased to say we have now successfully predicted, and now I have a successful prediction tool, and we will be publishing this paper with the NCI, that we can now not only predict this, we can actually induce T-cell activated T-cells that are specific to the new epitope to which we predict. Which meant we needed to build this massive system of supercomputing, sequencing machines, DNA, RNA, and fully trained outcome predictors, or 31,000 fully trained outcome predictors tied to 21 million outcomes over 6 compute years. And that was one of the large reasons why we've sort of gone away. We now have 40 petabytes of genomic storage data, over 21 million outcomes analyzed, and over 1,000 issued claims on artificial intelligence. Which brings us then to the opportunity that we really now, if you combine this massive infrastructure together, the opportunity for us to now overcome the bioinformatic challenge is here. However, you still have another challenge. You have this interoperability scale challenge of how do we take n equals 1 and then drive it to the population at large? How do you find the right patient, the right provider, and the right payer? And how do we coordinate the care and bring this artificial intelligence to the point of care through a thing called Evity? And how do we bring the whole infrastructure system? And that's NantHealth. That's why I took that public. But then how do we actually take this and actually start the process by bringing the natural killer cells to the market and let people understand the value of off-the-shelf natural killer cells? And that's NantQuest that I took public. But that's not enough, because you need to take all of this and then combine this into what I call the pharmaceutical company of the future, where you need to now change the whole clinical trial system, that it's based on the molecular signature, not the anatomy, where you need to build a manufacturing facility, where you need to build the product for N equals 1, and that's NANT, and that we kept private. And that's what I'm announcing to you today. So this is the system of the NANT companies, which is really the opportunity for me to really create the logic of what we've been doing. And as I said, NANT is privately held. I'll give you a little taste of what we're doing at NANT. We now have 14 planned phase 2-3 studies, 14 pivotal studies across all tumor types. And I think the day will arrive, hopefully by 2020, where we have your DNA sequence. One of the things we've quietly built is a thing called GMP in the box, where we can now build a manufacturing facility for N equals 1, where this box has now all the artificial intelligence, can actually review, shake, look, see, no human beings touch the system, so that it's completely automated and grow natural killer cells, CAR T cells, adenoviruses for N equals 1, completely disposable and completely automated. It's now being shown in Europe, where we're now running this for stem cells for arthritis, complete microscopic view of the cells with that'll be monitored through your mobile phone, and the heart of it is run through very sophisticated electronics and software. So this GMP in the box now will become the ability for us to completely scale and overcome the supply chain, the interoperability, the crossing the chasm, and take us to the NANT cancer vaccine. Which now quickly I'll take you through this. I won't take you through this hypothesis. How much time do I have left, Mike? 5 minutes. Oh, it says 5 up there. Okay, well, I'm going to take you through the hypothesis then. Okay. Well, this is the hypothesis that I presented to the FDA, that cancer growth is completely personalized. You are your cancer. It's by actually understanding your genome, and the only way to understand your genome is you have to use you as a control. That is why we pursued tumor normal. And I think Sloan Kettering and Johns Hopkins has now validated what we said, that unless you do tumor normal, the tumor only tests are completely false positive. So only thereby can you identify the neoepitope. And I presented this tumor normal at JP Morgan, and I showed you that there are 4 patents got issued on the tumor normal. Number 2 is that we need to change the behavior, that high dose, what I call uninformed chemotherapy, will result what we call intolerogenic cell death. and in fact induce metastasis. And number three, that immunosuppression environment must be modulated. And number four, that the natural killer cell is the first line of defense. I call that the first responder to cancer. That we need to, however, integrate the dendritic cell and the CAR T cell and the T cell so that you have both innate and adaptive immunity. Only then will checkpoints work. And you need to quietly find a way to orchestrate both these complex multiple cells at the same time in the same patient across a 3-week protocol to orchestrate what I call a temporospatial sequence to induce what I call immunogenic cell death. These are big words, very complicated, I get it. I actually even threw out a crazy term of what I call oncotherapeutics, because we really need to do what we call quantum oncotherapeutics. And that's why we ended this with this trial called QUILT, which is a quantitative trial, lifelong trial, because we need to monitor this patient for life. You need to treat cancer like a virus. And if you did that, you'd have what we call long-term durable responses to drive what we call immunogenic cell death. And we exploit the tissue itself in the body as a source to induce cancer-specific antigens and new epitopes. So now let me take you through that journey of this cancer cell that's sitting inside this tumor microenvironment. The first job is we got to decode, and that's GPS. The second job we have to penetrate, and that's Abraxane, and that's aldoxorubicin. The third job we have to overcome these myelo-derived suppressor cells in Tregs. And some of you have seen this opportunity with Nektar and Bristol-Myers and taking IL-2. Sadly, IL-2 upregulates Tregs. We need to overcome these Tregs. And then you need to uncover the tumor because you need to expose those new epitopes. Only then have you actually, what we call, edited the tumor to make the environment from a cold tumor to a hot tumor, so that you can begin to orchestrate the immune system, so we begin to encode. And you encode that with the GPS decode into the adenovirus so that you activate the dendritic cell. If you activate the dendritic cell, you've now informed. But by informing, you now activate the CD4 and CD8 cells. Now you have your activated cells. But you now have the opportunity to enhance this activation with a fusion protein of IL-15. And this is what we call N-803, which activates both the CD8 and CD4 cells with our NK cells. So now you've activated both the NK cells and the CD8 cells. We are both killer cells. With the killer cells present, you can now infuse through a blood transfusion an off-the-shelf natural killer cell called HANK, which is what NanQuest has developed, and you begin to unleash what we call ADCC. Once you've unleashed ADCC and activated the CD4 cells and created the environment of CD8 cells, finally, guess what? You can give checkpoints. So this is what I mean beyond checkpoints, because only in the right environment will checkpoints begin to work. What's exciting about that is that now you begin to establish memory cells, and we've now built a whole cytokine, chemokine development program which will drive to the memory NK and T cell and create sustainability. This complexity is what I presented to the FDA as the mechanism of action of the entire immune system. That is translated in action into step one as GPS cancer, step two of aldoxorubicin and Abraxane, and overcoming the suppressor cells, and adding a HDAC inhibitor with Viracta to upregulate MHC1. and then adding the adenovirus and yeast virus to all the tumor-associated antigens, these are all phase ones and phase twos, and activating the dendritic cell, and then adding the IL-15s, and these are now in phase twos and phase threes in accelerated FDA status to activate the NK and T cells, and then adding the HANKs and the ADCCs, and these are all in phase twos in NanQuest, and then adding checkpoint inhibitors and generating these cytokines towards the memory NK T cell and what we believe the Holy Grail. This crazy chart is basically combined into two procedures, a blood transfusion of NK cells and a subcutaneous injection. And this could even be delivered in Africa and other parts of the world. And when I think the opportunity for us now to be the exporter of systems of innovation is really one of the most exciting opportunities. So very quickly, in the few minutes, I did realize this would take an hour. That's Abraxane, the N side, the A, the adenovirus, that has the system, the natural killer cell that you will hear more from NanQuest, where you see the high affinity CD16 and the targeted ability to put the new epitopes. Here is a HER2 targeted NK off the shelf, killing HER2 positive breast cancer. The ability for us then to take these and add this to IgG1 antibodies with the CD16 and kill and change the profile from a high affinity to a low affinity and change the survival, employ these with other molecules, and then finally this IL-15, which is also a sub-Q injection, and as you see the ability for IL-15 versus IL-2 to upregulate NK cells in the lymph nodes. And here is a massive proliferation of CD4, CD8, just published in blood, and absence of Treg cells. So we are finally there. We've now had tested 3,000 patients to date over all these clinical trials. This is the pivotal trial, and this has been presented at ASCO, our booth. These are the pivotal trials of the company NANT. In phase threes and phase twos, we completed all the phase ones of this vaccine across all these tumor types, from sarcoma, bladder, chordoma, lung, pancreas, breast, head and neck. And very quickly now, in the last 5 minutes, let me share with you the results. As I started my presentation, we were taking a big risk. We're going after the sickest of the sick. These patients, best supportive care, have 1 month to live. Our very first patient, very brave young man, 35 years old, children with 2 years, old children, has said he wants his picture shown. I struggled because I knew this is a public presentation. He wanted his picture shown. He wanted his picture of his family shown. And I'm going to share with you some results, and I just want to, again, show you the patient's pictures I show you have asked me to show them their pictures. So this is, you'll start seeing pictures of some patients. But we took on this challenge, and this is the paper I was referring to you, the systemic review just recently by Europe of pancreatic cancer, where best supportive care, the survival of these patients, 1 month in third line. So this is for patient number one, a 35-year-old male, now in third line. He got his first dose in 2017. Rapidly, his CA19-9 dropped to normal. He became pain-free, gained weight. His CT scan showed a reduction. And cut to the chase, he's now 9.7 months. And his CA19-9 is normal. This is his first infusion, and here he is on his anniversary, his 8th month anniversary with our team. patient number two is now CA19-9 normal. She was cachectic, losing 50 pounds in taking methadone twice a day in severe pain. After the first cycle, she became less pain. By the second cycle, she was pain-free. She's completely pain-free on no methadone, and she's now 7 months and normalizing CA19-9. This patient number three, CEA dropping and so forth. So I think I'm now comfortable that we are on the right path, and we, as said, received 25 INDs. We have 14 pivotal trials, and the companies, as I said, to make it clear to you, that's Nant Health, that's Nant Quest. The rest is this new company called Nant, in which Nant will be the company that I hope will take us to the path of printing your drug. So thank you for your attention. I'm amazed you sat through 1 hour, but I'm happy to take questions in the last 2 minutes.
Can you talk about the FDA response as you went through all this and the regulatory position?
So I met with the entire leadership of the FDA, and there's the Center of Excellence, Oncology Center of Excellence, some of you may know. And some of you may have seen John Woodcock's presentations, a public presentation, the clinical trial system is broken, and the concept of combination therapy. So not only were they supportive, they think this is the innovation that is necessary to move this forward in the world of biologics. So I think the opportunity there, I understand that a new guidelines or guidance is actually in draft form now to talk about the approval based on this mechanism of action in combinations. So I'm very excited. The right to try law that just got passed, I think, is going to interestingly be very helpful in this context. Obviously, we need to do this in a very responsible way. And we will be participating in patients who want to participate in the right to try as well. Any other questions? Well, thank you very much.